Ladies and gentlemen, I am thrilled. I have a blank piece of paper in front of me. I don't need any notes at all with this woman. I just am amazed at her talent. She has gone from strength to strength around the world and just won Woman of the Year, Merseyside Woman of the Year. Emma Rogers, hello.
Hi, okay.
I'm so pleased you've come in. I wanted to talk to you about your work. I want to talk to you about your life. I want to talk about your kids. I want to talk about your husband. I want to talk about your style and where it came from. Who's Emma Rogers? Where did it come from?
Well, I've been making, as an artist, I've been making things on my mum's kitchen table since I was about three, so probably from there, really. And then I went straight on to art college after school. And uni, and just I was always making. I had to, so kind of it was in my blood.
So it's always been there from yeah. Because I know you're helping a friend of mine's daughter, and I remember you saying to me, "She's so advanced." So are there different stages of becoming an artist?
Yeah, I mean, the person you're talking about, her daughter's already got her own style, and she's only nine, which is quite incredible. Mm. So I'm looking forward to working with her.
Now, let's get this out of the way, because we've got to do this right at the beginning. Your mother's a listener. She will be listening, and she's a fan, and she loves the show, and she's also a great supporter of you. Yeah. Tell us about your mum, because she's been poorly, hasn't she?
Yeah, she was diagnosed about 6 years ago now, and Clatterbridge were fantastic. Couldn't have got through it all without them, the whole team. And she's doing really good now. Yeah, she's doing great. So, yeah, because of them, my children have a grandmother, and that's, I don't think you'd go any further than that.
No, it's great. And you've done a lot with the doctor, who is a beautiful artist in himself, isn't he? Tell us about his work.
Well, I do projects with Professor Mint. So each year we'll do an exhibition. All the sales go to Clatterbridge. So 100% of the sales go to Clatterbridge. He's a painter and I'm a sculptor. So we do joint exhibitions and we donate for Clatterbridge as well, for like auction prizes and stuff as well. But I've become really good friends with him. We're neighbours and I'll pop in for a coffee. But he's such an amazing talent and very, very humble. Yeah. So he's been fantastic.
And his paintings.
Yeah, his paintings are beautiful.
I've got one of them. They're just magnificent. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. There's a lot of talented people out there, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely.
Is your business the same as being an actor in the respect that you need that big break? Or not?
I think it helps, but along with the big break, you have to work with the big break and really push it. So I was very lucky. In my third year of my degree, our tutors were great. I went to Wolverhampton University. Our tutors were great and they forced us to apply for everything. We just did it discreetly and you were shocked if you got in. It was a pleasant surprise and you hadn't told anyone about it if you didn't, so it didn't matter. So we were made to enter. I entered the Victoria and Albert Museum Contemporaries 2 and I was lucky enough to get through into the exhibition, but I won a few prizes in that as well. So my first exhibition was in the Victoria and Albert Museum, so one of the prizes was an exhibition as well. So it meant that a lot of people approached me from quite early on, but you do have to sort of grasp on that and be quite prolific in keeping people updated. And so it was a fantastic break, which really helped with my career.
What I found interesting talking to you, and as I've got to know you, you're a businesswoman, and a lot of artists aren't business people, but you've got to be, haven't you? It's got to be part of the job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always seen it as work, even. When I was 11, I helped in Rennie's Arts and Crafts for pocket money. So, and then I worked in an industrial ceramics place from when I was like 15, just all part-time on like my Saturdays and stuff. But I think if you want to carry on making the stuff that you love, you've got to find a way to fund it. So you've got to be quite business savvy, I think, to carry on doing what you love.
Yeah. When did it start breaking for you? Was it after the museum?
Yeah, I then entered the Royal Academy Summer Exhibition and was accepted there. And that was it was my first bronze that I entered into that. So from selling the editions of the bronze, then I could invest in my studio, so buy my kilns, etc. So I could be quite self-sufficient. And then it carried on from there. So I did SOFA Chicago, New York, started showing around Asia. I had a manager from a European work from when I was 20. So that was fantastic. Yeah, so I get to travel the world with it, which is great fun. And then I went into working with Marvel approached me a few years ago, so I've done a few film sets with them as well.
Well, I was going to get onto this. This is amazing, isn't it? Tell me how you felt when you were with your kids, because you've got two fabulous kids and a very nice husband. What did you feel when you were sitting in the cinema and saw your work in a science fiction Marvel thriller?
It was quite surreal. Really surreal, but they let me take the children down on set for the filming of that. I mean, when they originally approached me, they didn't approach me as Marvel. They came under a pseudonym and told me the film sort of feel and would I be interested. When I said yes, it wasn't until I'd been speaking to them for a couple of months that they told me who they were. And then I developed a really nice relationship with them. So after Guardians of the Galaxy, I was allowed to go down on set for Guardians of the Galaxy. And I did the pieces, the kind of gruesome ones for the professor's spaceship, for the collector, he's called. He goes around other worlds collecting strange artifacts. So that was good fun. And then, because I got on well with them, they invited me back for Avengers Age of Ultron. So they invited the children down to go on set. So they met Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth in full Thor costume, made a big fuss of them. And they got to drink shakes in the trailer and punch Captain America's punch bag. And it was a really lovely experience, you know, that had come from... I wasn't expecting any of it. And it meant that the kids have got a really lovely memory.
Emma, what did you feel when you found out it was Marvel? And it's the director that was a fan, wasn't it?
They were saying... What did they... Matrix bunnies, I think they were calling them, or something. It was a bit of a shock, because I still don't know where they heard about me, to be honest, so...
Flattering.
Very flattering. Yeah. And I think even when I got down to the set, I still felt like I was going to get turned back.
Now, you had works in Beirut, yeah. In Sri Lanka. Tell us a bit about Beirut. Did you go out?
No, I meet Alice. She's got Alice Mogagreb Gallery. I meet her I do Art Paris with her in the Grand Palace on the Champs-Élysées. So that's a beautiful venue. So we normally meet there, arrange the exhibition, and then it's curated. She gets really unusual curators in, so there'll be film directors and stuff to curate the exhibition. So she's always got a really interesting twist on the work.
It's incredible. I'm talking to Emma Rogers, who lives on the Wirral. Do you pinch yourself at what's happening with your life?
Well, half the time I'm in my blue overalls in the Foundry.
But you look
freezing.
Very glamorous even in those.
Know about that.
Yes, you do.
So it's a really, it's really mixed. I'm mainly in the Foundry.
Do you pinch yourself at the work you've got? And it's around the world, and the people from Marvel ring up, or do you take it for granted? I know you're a very modest woman.
I don't know if I always take it in, to be honest. Because you don't always see everything. Like, I've sent off three exhibitions this week. My work's travelled more than me this week. And so you don't always see everything. It's lovely that I can do the job I love every day of the week, really. And I really do appreciate that. I love that I can do what I want at my chosen career every day of the week.
What is interesting is that you have got your own design and your own creations, and you know exactly what you want. Is it your hairs that are your signature piece?
Yeah, I suppose the hairs are. And the Liver Bird's getting quite popular now as well, but... Yeah, I suppose it was the hair originally, because I had a pet hair that I worked from a lot, that he was in my studio. So, yeah.
And your Liver Bird is in the Cunard building outside the mayor's office.
Yeah, there's one in there, and I'm an honorary fellow in Liverpool John Moores University, and they've got a bronze one of my Liver Birds in there as well.
It's incredible. Have you ever painted?
Yeah, I used to paint a lot. It's having the time. I still draw. But it's having the time to paint as well. So, yeah, I did used to paint.
Now, people that listen to the show always pick up on people like you, because they learn from that. There must be a lot of frustrated artists listening to this interview right now. What advice would you give them?
I've ended up going into a lot of different worlds with my career. So I wouldn't rule any area out. I wouldn't just think, you know, you've got to do the gallery route. I've worked with interior designers and always going the extra mile. So, yes, you can deliver that to wherever, which is can sometimes be just a nightmare, but you do it. Or if someone asks something at last minute, especially at the start of the career, you work to the night through the night till you've got it done, basically. And I've done that for years. And it's really nice that I'm enjoying the benefits of that now. But you do have to go down quite work out a few different routes, not just one. It doesn't go in a straight line, I don't think, as an artist. And it's amazing when you can be discovered. Sky Arts did a documentary about me when I was like 27, and you'd think that would be like a big thing in my career, but it was other aspects that I didn't think would ever lead to anything that I was just doing as a favour that have sometimes led to much more. And yeah. I think there's got to be a straight line with the work. I'd diversify myself.
Do you have to go to uni to be an artist?
I don't think you do, but I think it helps because it gets you mixing with people who can send you on the right guidelines, really. You could produce just as great work working from your own studio, but mixing with those lecturers who can guide you of where to start, where to approach, and they're already in the mix of everything anyway. It helps in that way, and I think it makes you more rounded being in that mix, really.
I think what's interesting I learned also about you is, as you know, I collect art. I don't know anything about art, but I collect art. We've got a lot of friends.
We've got a gorgeous collection, Pete.
Thank you. Well, we've got a lot of friends who are collectors. You have clients, don't you, that ring you all the time and want to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And they're your clients that just love your stuff and don't want anything else. I didn't realise people of your stature had things like that happening, but they are like, you know, I want to buy a Wedgwood, I need another piece of Wedgwood, I need another Emma Rogers.
Yeah, and
they're all over the world, aren't they?
And it's quite diverse orders as well. I do a lot of private commissions for certain clients. I mean, I've done staircases, porches, radiators, all in my style. So, yeah. I mean, the radiators are good fun because using the fin effect with the copper. I had these radiators made, and then using the fin effect, I learned about BTUs, and from a 13,000 BTU rad, I had it projecting 21,000. So I like learning technical aspects of things as well. And then I've just got clients that just want to know when the next show's happening, and they will fly around the world for it. So a client that might come to visit me in Paris might also come and visit me in New York.
But I've got to point out for people listening, these clients could be just ordinary people. It doesn't mean
because
they buy your work that they're wealthy, wealthy people. Some of them are ordinary, but they're still great collectors and fans.
Yeah, I had one that used to ring me every Wednesday to see how work was going. And if anything sounded interesting, he'd drive up from London and he'd be at my door by 8 o'clock on the Thursday. So.
Yeah. I know I can mention a couple of people. I know that Phil Redmond's a great fan of yours. I know that Hugh and Kathy Frost are friends, but also love your work. It must be flattering to go into somebody's home and see a piece of art that you've created.
It's a bit like bumping into an old friend when I go there, really. That's the best way to describe it, because you've had such a relationship with it when you're building it. And then you sort of bump into it and it's like, oh, that's quite nice. It's nice to see it again.
I became a fan after sitting in Hugh Frost's home and seeing one of the ballerinas.
Yeah.
That's when I first became a fan. I didn't really know you well until then and fell in love with the stuff. I was, as you know, a friend of Silla's, a friend of Robert's, the son. I was the one that recommended that he spoke to you. You did the rest. But you must be proud of the Silla statue. It is spectacular.
It was an amazing experience, and the family were just great to work with as well. So yeah, it was fantastic, and just the research, and you know, how could you cover someone's career that spanned the way hers did in one sculpture? How could you tell that story, really? So it was fantastic to work on with Andy. Yeah, it was really good.
Explain about the statue, because you had this brilliant idea. The skirt is in fact photographs of her life. Explain about this.
So the dress was based on a Mary Quant dress that she'd worn in quite a few shoots that she loved. The hair was based on images from the very first time Fidel Sassoon cut her hair. And the dress, I just thought she's had such an amazing career. I just didn't want just a straight statue. It seemed boring. It didn't sum her up enough, really. So I used images, key images from her career, family photos. You know, there's a real mixture of very personal shots through to stereotype career shops, album covers that you'd have seen. And I used them as the imagery on the squares of the dress. And then there was text from personal messages from friends and family through to lyrics of songs, quotes, important dates to her, like a wedding anniversary and things. And then on the base, I've put an anemone because it was in both her wedding bouquets. So I thought that'd be quite nice for her.
And the shoes are spectacular, the shoes. Did you wear their shoes?
Yeah, I have a really bad shoe fetish, I have to admit.
Well, you did the shoes beautifully. Yeah. But what? Explain what you feel. I mean, and you did it with Andy as well. We must mention Andy.
Andy Edwards,
who did the Beatles.
Yeah, he did the Beatles on the waterfront.
Which is great. Explain what you feel, because it's a piece of art that's going to be there for your children, your grandchildren, if you have grandchildren. It's there forever. It's amazing. What do you feel when you walk past it?
I feel quite attached to that one, really. But I think it's because I got to know the family and learnt about her. So I feel kind of protective over it. But I don't really think about it's going to be there however long. I don't really ever think about that side of things. But I feel kind of protective over that piece. It was really strange that when it was unveiled, I felt weird walking past it for the first couple of weeks, because we've had to keep it so hidden and secret for so long. I felt like I should go and wrap her up or something.
No, I know. I was incredibly flattered to watch her being built. I mean,
well,
I
you came in and saw
it.
All the stages.
I cried several times. Yeah. I mean, it really, really moved me. And I think it's an amazing piece. It has to be looked after once a year. What happens?
Oh, it's really minor. It's just waxed, if there's any. It's just you warm it up and wax it. And then brush it down and polish it.
You warm the statue up?
Yeah, you just give it. It means the wax soaks in.
So you do it there?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to be there waxing her?
Yeah, yeah.
Not her legs, the whole of her.
The whole of her.
The whole of her.
The whole of her.
Do you need an agent as an artist?
Well, I had a manager for my European work from when I was 20, which helped. So he'd arrange the exhibitions, and I'd fly out to, if it was like Belgium, Holland, Paris. That was great. That was fantastic because he organised everything. I manage everything in the States myself. I mean, it helps. It does help. But there's some areas that I've been working with people that long now. Yeah. It's best I deal direct. Yeah. And then there's other areas where it would be helpful. But it's just knowing what suits, really.
I know you're a very modest woman. I know you won't like me to say this, but you do give an awful lot to charity. And what is marvellous, and you do this also with commissions as well, that you have workshops for the kids, don't you? And explain how that works, because that's got to be something you can't buy.
Well, people come along and they'll bring their drawings or their photographs of what they'd like to make. And then it's broken down during the day. You've done one. What did you think of it?
Well, I loved every minute of it. I mean, I couldn't get the knee right on my statue, and you went, do it, do it, do it. And I went, I was trying to do that, and I got perfect knees, which is a gift and a talent. I loved it. I thought it was and it's something that money can't buy. It's flattering and weird to see. And you're a different person. When you put the blue overall on, you're a different person.
Yeah. Well, I think anyone can make a sculpture. I think it's just a bad art teacher that tells students that they can't make anything. It just needs to be broken down and explained simply. And I think with figurative stuff, if you just follow nature, you can't really go wrong. So,
what happens with porcelain statues when they break? I mean, because you've got to be careful with them, aren't you? I mean, you wrap them like... I mean, but what happens? Can they be repaired?
Yeah, they can be repaired.
But artists don't like doing that, do they?
You wouldn't sell a broken one as a whole piece. You'd have to tell people that it had been damaged or something. But some pieces are made separately and fitted together, but people would know that when they were buying it. You'd explain that when they were buying it.
Easy or hard to work in bronze?
Oh, I love working in bronze because I think I'm just quite a bit of a tomboy, so I love using the plasma cutter. And, yeah, I love working in bronze. And I just like to push materials, so... with the porcelain, I like to push that as far as it'll go. With the bronze, I want it to look like it could go any minute, and really like push that material. So that's why I'm drawn to certain materials, is to push them and make them look, give as much energy as I can with them.
Are there any new materials coming through?
Well, I've been working in Liverpool John Moore's Fab Lab lately with the 3D printers. I've I've been making shoes.
What? Yeah. Oh, didn't you have these in the clothes show?
Yeah.
Tell us what's that about?
The British Style Collective. Yeah. We've got them in Camp and Furnace, and they're based on, I make the Liver Bird Roscoe, it's a Liver Bird for the Roscoe Lectures. It's the award given at the end of the lecture to whoever's given the talk. And I had that 3D scanned, and then working with some of the team, including Alex at the Fab Lab, we extended it and made them into a pair of shoes. So the two birds look out. So one's guarding the city, one's looking out to sea, and their wings sort of wrap around your feet. So the first prototype was like in a really hard plastic, completely unwearable, just to work out the shape. And then we've made it with one with like flexi wings that wrap around your feet for comfort. And then we're looking at taking that further so that you could actually be a mass-produced shoe.
So you could eventually buy them?
Yeah.
Liver Bird shoes?
Yeah.
Oh, you've heard it first on Radio City 2 and Radio City Talk. I'm talking to Emma Rogers. Emma, you've just won an award. I know you were very humble about it, and you said about all the women that were up for the award, but and it was joint with the Everyman, which is a pretty good joint.
Yeah.
Tell us about the award.
The award was for arts and culture, and as you said, it was with, joint with the girls from the Everyman, who've done an amazing job there. So I'm still shocked that I got nominated. Never mind what won my category. So, yeah, it was a lovely surprise.
Was it a nice feeling getting up?
And it was a gorgeous day. Everyone who'd been nominated, you couldn't have met a lovelier group of women. They were so strong, but engaging, and just a gorgeous group of women.
Yeah. It's a big event every year now, and it's really, really good, becoming good. How do you get the feeling you want to create something? Like, I know you love animals. I love your birds. I know you've got loads of dogs. And in fact, tell us about your fox, your friend.
I have a little fox that comes to visit me occasionally.
And he's
Charlie.
Tame, completely tame.
Completely tame, yeah. He hangs out with the dogs, but he comes to visit now and again. I have him for odd weekends and stuff. He's lovely.
They're crazy. Where did the fetish for getting animals dressed up? You love.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She loves putting coats on the dogs and just dressing up, taking a photo and then taking a photo. Where's that come from? Is that from dressing up when you were a kid?
I think the kids have misled me on that one.
Oh, right. Oh, it's the kids, is it? Any budding artists amongst your two daughters?
They're both really talented, but they're interested in other things. And I think, I mean, they pop into the studio whenever they want. They can use whatever they want in there. But if I get involved, it becomes boring. So,
right.
Yeah, they both had their first bronzes cast before they were two. Carmen's done bronze casting in the back garden when my husband went out, because he would have told us off. But she's in full safety equipment, which she poured her own molten bronze piece.
Wow.
So, yeah. So.
That's amazing. Now, you're a glamorous woman, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. A very attractive woman. You love clothes. You wear beautiful clothes. Were you a party animal when you were a little bit younger before married with kids?
I used to like to go out occasionally. I just like going out dancing.
The reason I ask that is, has that been involved in your career? Has that helped make who you are?
I'd not really thought about it. I like going out and socialising. I like meeting new, interesting people. So I suppose that helps when you, because you get put into such weird worlds in the art world. I go to Lea Hurst Veterinary School some days. I'm on a film set another day. I'm at a private view another day. But the most of the time, I'm in my blue overall. So I suppose it helps you mix with different people.
Without going into actual money side of it, I'll just ask a question. If somebody wants to commission a piece, say, I won't mention any people, but there's a person I know, you've just done a big commission in the garden. How do you price that up? Or do they say, I've got so much to spend on it? How does it work?
Well, we normally find out a budget, especially if it's a large-scale piece.
Do they say the budget?
It depends. It can either be, I can suggest what I think would work, or they can say, we've got a budget to spend on this area, what do you suggest? And then I will push the material as far as I can for that amount of money, really. And then with the bronze, you've got to, when you're selling through a gallery, you've got to take into account that you're paying for the bronze casting, which is really expensive because it's so laborious. And then the gallery's taking a percentage as well. So that the price isn't just what the artist gets when you see it in a gallery. It covers a number of things as well.
Because galleries take a lot of money, don't they?
Yeah, and I actually don't mind that. If it's a good gallery, I mean, some of them will double up on your price. But if it's a good, like my Strick Off Fine Art, who I work with in New York, and my Beirut gallery, they're some of my favourite galleries that I work with. They really push the work. They get it to the right clients, like Ellen DeGeneres and Keanu Reeves and stuff, buy my work through them. And if they work hard for you, I don't mind it, really, to be honest.
And also, they've got that piece of art in a place that could be there for 8 months, a year, whatever, yeah. You know.
And they display it. If they display it beautifully, yeah. And you know, they work yeah. hard for you.
You've just mentioned a couple of names there. Do you get a buzz knowing people around the world have got your work?
It's quite nice. I quite like popping into gallery. It's nice how social it is with the galleries. Really, that I was in Kuala Lumpur a few months ago, so I popped into my gallery. That it's quite nice how. Social it is, really, that you can, you know, you can go to different countries and you've got those contacts that you can go and see, because I've been building some of those up for like 20 years, so I've got to know them pretty well over time.
When you look at your stuff, do you ever scrap and go, no, I'm not having that, start again?
Yeah, things have been shot in the garden, they've been smashed. Oh, someone stole something out of my bin once, so I now smash them in with a hammer as well. So if I'm not happy with it, no one sees it. Mm-hmm. I'm quite a control freak with stuff like that.
You are? Yeah, but that's your work, isn't it? That's your name. What goes yeah. out and leaves your home is really important. Now, I went, I've been working in Singapore a few times for this charity, and you heard about it, and straight away you made a piece. The piece sold for a great deal of money. Every single penny went to Riding for the Disabled and the Gurkhas families, which was fantastic, absolutely fantastic. But you created this piece. Where did the idea come from? I mean,
I did the merlion because yeah. it's a symbol of Singapore. You see it around the city. It's a celebration of the place. So I made the merlion, and then I hid the story of it within the piece, because I quite like hiding a story within a sculpture, whether it be a special date or with some clients, they'll give me things that they've found in their grounds or things that are sentimental to be hidden yeah. within a piece. So I thought it'd be quite nice to hide the story of the merlion within the piece as well. And it's such a symbol of the place, really.
Well, it took everyone's breath away. And I remember showing it, and I was just like, wow. Hmm. Now, another piece you did was Claire Sweeney's Beautiful Baby Jackson. But what you did was remarkable with his feet, with his hands, with parts of him. It was just incredible around a rocking horse.
Yeah.
It's all the detail, all the work you get involved with. Has this been built up over the years? You've gone, oh, I'll do that, I'll do that.
I've always liked to hide a story within my work. And sometimes it's more intricate than others. I did a private commission for people who've got a property down in Powys. And they'd found, it was an old farmhouse, so they'd found old hobnail boots, and I think there was a branding iron that was like over 100 years old. There was loads of different artefacts that they found, and they also had particular plants that they liked that grew there. So all that was moulded and then cast within the piece. So the whole of it was like putting it back, really, what they'd found sort of put back into the landscape, which was really quite nice, rather than it being lost and wasted.
Here's a difficult question before we finish this interview.
Oh no, what are you going to do to me?
Is there one piece of everything you've ever made that you, that's the one?
I'd never sell that. There's a rabbit that I made that was in the V&A, and then it I had it moulded and cast, and it was then in the Royal Academy. And I think because that was a real, oh wow, this could be a career, and I could make some money out. It was a real eye opener. It was a real confidence boost. That what happened around the time I made that, so I'd always keep that.
Emma Rogers, you're a fascinating woman. How can people find out more about you? Have you got a website?
Yeah,
have you got
emmarogers.co.uk is the website which I update, and I'm Emma Rogers Art on Twitter.
And you've got the most beautiful new catalogue out, which yep. is, your work is amazing. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.